Welcome to The Hidden World of Women, a podcast brought to you by Women's Health and Wellbeing Services. My name is Emma and I'll be your host for today's episode. Today I'm joined by another absolutely amazing woman, Penny. Penny is, she has five children. She's a mum of five and her eldest is 19. And she's not quite sure how that happened because she still is only in her early 30s slash turning, she's 49. So, being 49 is awesome. You know, getting older is a privilege denied to many and we are rocking 40s. So let's embrace those. Anyway, that's a soapbox for another day. Penny is legally blind since birth. She is a wife to a 6 foot 4 year old. She recently has taken up roller skating again after a 26 year hiatus. She's enjoying art, including mosaic, pottery and woodwork. And in case you can't tell from the brief introduction here, being blind does not hold Penny back. I guess it certainly adds some extra challenges. And I'm so grateful, Penny, that you're here today to talk about what it's like living being legally blind.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to be here. It's not a experience that most people get to have. So, you know, it'll be hopefully fun to explain that to some people.
And so I've known you for...
Been a little while.
And yet, I didn't realise that people who are blind can still see something.
Yeah, it's definitely a spectrum. Mm. You know, what I understand people to comprehend as blind is like black blind.
Put a blindfold on.
Yeah, put a blindfold on and you can't see anything. And to a degree, that is kind of what it's like, but I always try to explain it like... It's more along the lines of try looking out of your elbow. You can't see anything. There's no black. There's no black to see. It's just there's nothing. And that's what most totally blind people experience. But then there's the majority of people who are blind or vision impaired will actually see something, whether it's shadows, blurry colours. You know, as far as retinitis pigmentosa, they have like they're looking through a straw, so it's a tiny little pinpoint of vision, you know, that they have left, nothing in the periphery. And some people have wavy lines and colours and splotches. It's all sorts of variation. For myself, I have nothing in my left eye. That's just filler. That just fills the hole in my head. It does nothing. And on the right hand side, I actually have. Not much in the way of usable vision, but I can actually read. You know, it's like a strong little magnifier that I use, but I can actually read a little bit. And it's enough to get around. I can see, my brain does most of the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
I see clues and my brain fills in the blanks. So.
I have so many questions just from that. Okay, So I want to clarify, when you say that you can read a little bit from your right eye, mm-hmm. Now, I've seen you reading and your nose is smushed up against the page. Yep. And that's with magnification.
Yes.
So it's not like you're kicking back on the beach reading a book.
No. Yeah. There's nothing from reading from a distance.
Yeah.
It has to be. I always, as a child, I always had a black nose.
Yeah,
I used to use lead pencil and I'd always have pencil marks and things all on the tip of my nose because I was dragging my nose across the paper. That was just a standard thing. It was like, you know, other kids had to wipe the crumbs and the Vegemite off their faces. Right. I also had to wash my nose.
And so you said that, so you've used the terms vision impairment and blind.
Yes.
Do you have a preference for what you use to describe yourself?
I don't. Mm-hmm. For ease of reference, quite often I will just use the term blind. Because I am walking around with a white cane most of the time. And people quite often don't understand the full spectrum of, you know, what vision loss can entail.
Yeah.
For ease of reference, I quite often will use blind. Or, you know, depending on if I want people to leave me alone and leave me be, I will be vision impaired. Depends. Depends on the moment.
Yeah,
but I don't have a preference.
Yeah,
I don't have a preference one way or the other.
When you said that your left eye is filling a void,
yes,
you wear your fringe over your left eye.
I do.
Now, do you do that to? Is that a conscious decision?
Part of it's cosmetic, mm-hmm. because I don't know if you can, well, you can see, that left eye has not developed fully. It's a lot more closed. That's part of the condition.
Yeah.
It has got some light perception, but only when I block out my good eye.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I can't sense anything. And even then, when I block out the good eye, it's only in the right conditions that I can sense light. But it tends to be closed more often. It closes itself. It's not something I have any control over. Part of the reason why I wear my fringe long is because my other eye is also very light sensitive. And it's portable
shade.
It's portable shade.
Yeah.
I can adjust it to the conditions.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's handy. It's handy. Yeah, I don't have to put sunglasses on. I can just kind of bring my fringe a little bit more forward, and I'm
create
good.
Your own little umbrella.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And has your vision changed over the years?
It technically hasn't. Not measurement wise, it hasn't changed, but the way I use it has. But since becoming a parent, it's not as efficient in the form of reading and anything involving sight, really, you know, craft work and so forth. I don't have the energy to invest into seeing.
Right.
Because it takes, like I said, my brain does a lot of the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
And because I'm spread between library day and lunch boxes and where's my red shirt and it's cricket training this afternoon, I have not got the mental energy to invest into seeing as much as I used to. So that has actually changed the way I handle life, which I'm not very happy about that. Because I always, always preferred using my vision.
Yeah.
You know, as a younger person. I always wanted to just get on with life like everybody else. And it was me and my magnifying glass and I was good to go. And these days, things have shifted and I'm turning more towards technology that gives audio output. So it converts, you know, either text into audio so that I can listen to it, or, you know, typing on the computer. If I need to, I can make it talk back to me so I don't have to read the screen. Things like that.
So when you were growing up, and I definitely want to talk about adaptive technology and the way that it's changed over the years.
Yeah.
When you were growing up and you were saying that you could, so, you know, as a child you were able to read, well, and still now you're able to read with your magnifying glass.
Yeah.
Would you read for pleasure?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, wow. So even the amount of work that would go into that.
Oh, for sure.
You still.
Yep. Yep. Because books were just a whole, you know, world outside.
Yeah.
You know, and what I wasn't seeing for myself, I could actually read and fill in the blanks and learn.
Oh, wow.
That way as well. So, you know, you're not just learning from vision, you're learning from the story. You know, the story might be, you know, he could see, you know, boats on the horizon. Well, I don't have a horizon. My horizon, if I've got one, is a lot closer to me than yours is to you. Yeah. You know,
I've got to the end of my nose.
So. And basically, I've also heard, I don't know how this works as well, I don't know, everybody says you need two eyes for depth perception. Well, so that's a concept that I don't actually understand then. I don't understand the full... I mean, I don't get it.
Yeah.
It's just something I don't understand. I've got a friend who also has one eye, vision out of one eye, and we spent, you know, when those magic eye books came out, we spent so long trying to work out how those things worked and we failed miserably.
If it makes you feel any better, I've never been able to do that either.
Okay, that's good. Yeah. Not just me then.
No, it's definitely not. But definitely not just you.
Maybe it's the depth perception thing, but I don't know. I don't know. It's just one of those mysteries.
Yeah.
3D movies, total waste of energy. You know, it's just a waste of money.
And I just have to put a little disclaimer in saying that I feel like I know you enough and well enough that it's okay for me to laugh and have a joke with you. So I'm in no way laughing at you.
I absolutely, for the majority of people, it's okay to laugh.
Yeah.
It's best to laugh as far as I'm concerned. You know, losing your vision is really hard.
Yeah.
For me, it's nothing I know anything about because I've never had it. I see a lot of people who've lost their vision later in life, and they have a much harder time than I do.
Because they know what they're missing out on.
They know what they're missing out on, and they're dealing with the frustration of not being able to do things the way they used to do them.
Yeah.
And having to learn new skills and having people around them respond differently.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, some back off and leave them to it, others mollycoddle. It's hard.
Mm.
It's much harder for them, I feel, than for us that have never known any different. But I think the path is a lot easier if you laugh.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's just life in general, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking about it. So when we first met, you were definitely not using a cane then.
Definitely not.
And I wonder, would that have impacted the way that people interacted with you? Because I probably wouldn't have actually known that you had vision impairment.
No, probably not. No.
And so I guess because of that, I'm like...
I mean, you might have figured it out eventually. Yeah, because in the scenario that we are in...
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, yeah. That...
You probably would have figured it out. But, I mean, I do a pretty good job of putting myself out there as a sighted person.
Yeah.
Which is... I can play both roles because, you know, I know enough. My brain fills in the blanks. I can play the game enough. Yeah. Not everybody's got, you know, that lucky. But, yeah, what was the question?
Oh, I'm just wondering, do you feel that when you go out with your cane...
Do people treat me differently? Yes. Yeah, there is an element of that. And, that's definitely there. Quite often people aren't... different people. But quite often some people will be reluctant to talk to you as if you're... just a regular, average, everyday person, because there's a disability there. There's a barrier.
And I guess it makes...
And it's a visual one, and they don't know how to...
I was going to say it makes it a visible disability, which is a really bad choice of words.
But it does. It announces to the world that I can't see.
Yeah.
You know, side note on that one, that's if I'm ever in a situation where I need to walk at night time.
Yeah.
Or in a situation where I'm not feeling comfortable... You know, that cane makes me, makes me vulnerable.
Yeah.
It highlights a vulnerability.
Mm.
And I have enough vision to, you know, to make that decision. Do I want to be in this vulnerable position and display that I'm an easy target?
Yeah.
Or do I want to put it away and risk the chance of falling over?
Hunking up.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, like, if nothing else.
Or running
else,
into a silver pole on a grey street.
Yeah. You know,
do I want to do that? The other side of that coin is sometimes if I've been in that situation, I use that cane as if I've had a huge row with somebody and I'm about to smack somebody's head in, and I walk with that energy.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, maybe. She might be an easy target, but she's not.
She might not be easy either. Yeah. She's got five kids and a husband. She's going to put up a fight.
Exactly. So I walk with that energy if I'm ever in that situation. But, yeah, people can tend to treat you differently. I generally don't allow that.
Yeah.
Because I tend to be a little bit more outspoken. Depends on the situation. Really, it's situational again. Because I can also go to scenarios where I might find myself in a room where I'm surrounded by people that I don't recognise, nobody recognises me, and it's quite hard to jump in and find a person to talk to because I can't read the room like everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, so I might even if I put the cane, like I'll have the cane with me, so I've got that barrier, so some people might not want to come up and approach me, or they may be open to that because they recognize that I have a barrier to reach them. So it's a two-way.
Yeah.
It's difficult.
Mm.
And each scenario is different. Yeah, it's quite.
And I know you can't speak for all visually impaired people, and you can't speak for all blind people.
No.
But if you were in a room,
my experiences for myself.
Yeah. That's it. You're only speaking for yourself, and I'm only asking for you.
Yep.
But also trying to add some extra information into my brain. Yep. So if you were at a conference and you were there and you were kind of by yourself, and so I could see you had the cane, so I know, like, is that a good cue that actually I'm going to struggle to go up and talk to people because I can't see well enough to do that?
Yep.
Maybe come and engage with me.
Yeah. Yeah. That. Yeah. Come and say hello.
Mm.
You know, and if I'm not cool with that, if I say I'm fine, it's no problem.
Walk away.
please don't feel that's a, you know, I'm like pushing you away and you've done the wrong thing. It's just that I might feel okay in that moment.
Yeah.
But it also could be an absolute relief. It's like, I don't just have to be alone in this room filled with people doing stuff that I can't see what they're doing.
Mm.
It's like, you know, I generally can't. I'm a sheep. I'm a sheep. I follow the leader.
Yeah.
I find... I'll tell you a funny story in a second. But I find somebody who seems to know what they're doing.
Mm.
And I won't necessarily stick to them like glue, but I will stay close enough to them so that I can find the bathrooms.
Yeah.
So that I can find, you know, where the tea and coffee is, although my nose helps.
Yeah.
You know, but, playing the sheep is a role that I do quite well, but not everybody's good with that.
Yeah.
You know, especially somebody who's lost their sight later in life. You know, that skill may not have developed in them yet. Or ever will.
Yeah.
Not everybody gets the same skills. But long before I had children, I went over to the US on my own. Terrified my parents.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
You know, why don't you take a friend with you? Because I don't want to.
How old were you?
I was 25 and I went for 3 months.
Oh, my God.
And I loved it. And I probably called home twice.
And that's the thing. So you were 25, blind, by yourself, on the other side of the world. Had you ever been there before?
Nope.
So never been before.
Nope.
And we didn't have, you know, mobile phones.
No.
You know, we certainly weren't texting and WhatsApping and Facebooking.
2000. So did we have mobile phones then? I can't remember.
I think we had mobile phones, but they cost an absolute fortune.
I didn't take it with me. I know that. I had a CD Walkman. I remember that.
A Discman.
The Discman, yep. I had one of those. A pack of heavy discs. But getting through the airport, I remember behaving like a sheep because I loved this woman. She was lovely, you know, because she wore, it was the prettiest shade. She reminded me of a budgie, you know, the green on budgerigars.
Yeah.
She had a suit that colour.
Oh, wow.
And I followed her from Melbourne all the way to LA. Because she just happened to be going where I was going, because I listened, you know, to the conversations, and she was nice and bright, and I followed her through to baggage claim, you know, all of that stuff. It was great. She was fabulous.
I'm not vision impaired, and I was driving to pick my son up from somewhere recently-ish, and I decided that the person I was following must be going where I was going, because I just decided that this person I was following must be one of the other boys' mums. So I followed this person the whole way to a drug deal. She was not going where I was going.
I was going to say, I know about your sense of direction.
And I have none. So, so I'm not vision impaired, but I'm definitely navigationally challenged.
This is actually a part where it's probably best that I don't always follow.
No, that's exactly it. No, so I was thinking that could have been really risky, just following this random person through LAX.
Yeah, could have ended up being frisked. And
that's it.
Yeah.
Has anybody put anything in your bag that you don't know about?
I don't know. I didn't see it happen. How am I meant to tell?
Far out. Is it even my bag? Oh, dear. So going all the way back, do you have siblings?
I do. I have one brother.
So how was it growing? Is he older or younger than
you? He is 7 years younger.
Oh, wow.
So there's a bit of an age gap.
Yeah.
And, you know, as he was moving into school, I was leaving primary school. As he was moving into high school, I was leaving high school.
Yeah.
So there was never really an overlap. He was just a noisy a noisy part of my home life.
Yeah.
You know, he's making noises again. Make him stop.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. So I guess that you, it was almost like being an only child then.
Yeah, to a degree.
Yeah. So you didn't sort of have the thing of growing up with a sighted sibling.
No.
No, no sort of
and
competition either way for attention.
No, no. It was quite... Well, up until the first 7 years, yeah. I had no competition whatsoever. Then I had a little bit.
Yeah.
But it was different.
Mm.
But I had a different kind of schooling as well to most kids. And they do it differently now. But when I was first went into primary school, I went into a school where there was two classes of vision impaired kids, a junior class and a senior class, school.
Ah, wow, okay.
And that's not, I don't know that that was common at the time, but that's how I got to experience things in the beginning. So I began in the junior class, obviously, and we would do the majority of our classes together, you know, and there was probably only anywhere between like 10 or 12 of us at the best, you know, or lower. So we actually did the majority of our classes together in our own little group where we did so many hands-on things. It was fabulous. You know, I remember just, you know, in the days where you didn't need parental consent to take the kids away from school, our teacher would be just like, I saw something interesting on the way to school, and we'd all just, oh,
that's okay.
Trundle off down the road.
That seems rude, doesn't it? Tell the class of vision impaired kids that you've just seen something interesting.
Oh no, it was like, come on, let's go and experience. Yeah. It was great. You know, and I remember sitting on the side of the road looking at all the oil, the patterns, the coloured oil, you know. And, you know, we used to go and look at trees and plants and, you know, go to the butcher down the road and watch sausages being made. And we'd have so many hands-on experiences.
Yeah.
And it was fabulous. But then it would come to like social studies or a science class, or sometimes it would be music, and we would go out to the regular classes and do the regular classes with them. Mm. So we had the best of both worlds.
Nice.
So we got the chance to learn from our peers, you know, because, you know, there's different techniques to, like, if you drop something on the floor, if you can't see, you can't look for it unless you go and sweep the floor with your hand. You know, that's something I feel, I don't remember doing it, but I feel like I learned that from somebody else.
Yeah.
We got a chance to try each other's magnifying glasses and, you know, learn from each other, you know, which was fabulous. And then at grade three, we got to grade three level and that program finished.
Oh.
Which was good in a way, bad in another.
Yeah.
And we all went off to our regular schools in our local areas. And, you know, that's a whole different experience again. Mm. And we had itinerant teachers come to us at that point. And that's, you know, I was at, I was, 9 years old, and they came and they taught me how to type because it was faster than writing.
Yeah.
So I used to type. And later on they decided that I should probably learn Braille, so I learned Braille. And, you know, I had all these additional skills, but originally the hands-on stuff was fabulous.
Yeah.
And I don't think, I don't know exactly how it works these days, but I don't think young blind kids get that opportunity in that way that we did. I think they're more integrated
early on. And I'm going to be honest, I don't know.
I'm not sure exactly myself either. But I don't know of any classroom programs that, like I had.
Yeah, I know probably, I was going to say 20 years ago, but actually it's probably 25 years ago now.
Yep.
I was working as an EA and just doing relief. But I was working with a girl for a couple of weeks she was probably year three or year four, and she was blind. And so, and I was, I don't know, 17 to 19, that kind of age range. And I'm trying to help her learn Braille, which is awesome because I'm like, I can't read it.
You're learning on the job.
100%. And it was very much about, rather than being special schools or, you know, integration and trying to reduce barriers and trying to bring people together rather than create segregation.
Which is great, but I have mixed feelings about it.
Tell me about that.
Well, I have mixed feelings about that because I think it's so beneficial. And I see that, you know, even now, you know, now that I'm older, going to places where you can actually learn from your peers and experience things from people who are dealing with situations like yours. Mm. I mean, it's great that we have EAs helping us learn. It's great that we have specialists guiding our path. But there's a lot to be said from learning from people who are experiencing what you're experiencing.
Mm.
Because you really don't know. Like, an OT is fabulous, but if they've never actually been in your shoes, it still is actually, to a degree, guesswork. And it's trial and error. And, you know,
and how can you be an expert in something if you've never experienced it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it's, it, you know, I mean, I want to say we've all kind of had funny feelings about a male telling us how to give birth. You know, it's like, have you ever done it?
Yeah.
You know, you might have witnessed.
Yeah, that's it. Know,
hundreds of women give birth.
Read a book, gone to a lecture.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Given the lecture. Yeah. You might have trained hundreds of people on how to help a woman give birth, but you've not actually done it.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I'm coming from with this. You can learn so much from your peers. And now that I'm older, I do some activities, you know, with blind people.
Mm.
And the majority of those blind people have become blind later in life. And they are all learning from each other as well as from the specialists.
Yeah.
You know, and it's such a valuable thing. And they, you know, have a better adaptation rate, you know, to, you know, their circumstances,
yeah,
than what they would have otherwise. So
yeah, and I think it's also the feeling connected to somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not just an isolated island.
Yeah.
You know, there are other people.
Shared experiences and knowing that you're not alone in experiencing this and
yep.
having difficulty with knowing where the toilet is in
oh,
situations.
Absolutely. You know, and if you do happen to be together in a scenario, like there's a couple of blind people or vision impaired people
yeah.
together, we'll all trundle off and find where we need to be.
That way, if you all go into the wrong toilet, you've all gone in together.
Exactly.
It's
exactly.
much less embarrassing to do it as a group, right?
Or we'll share tips.
Yeah.
You know, if one of us has found it,
yeah.
you know, we'll be like, okay, get up from the table, head over to the left-hand wall, trail that along, go past two doorways, and it's the next one.
Yeah.
You know, so we'll, like, be able to give each other, you know, the directions that we need. It's not a sighted person will say, oh, it's the third door on the left.
Yeah.
You know, which is great. It gives you some indication, but, you know.
How do I get
it's
to the
same
third
but
door
different.
On the left? Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah that's
it's
it.
The same but different, yeah.
Just,
you know, or you'll feel the difference. You know, you're on the carpet. Once you hit the hard floor, you'll know that you're almost there. You know,
by the
like
way,
that.
Be careful because there's a small bump,
exactly.
you know, in this situation.
There's
and
a handrail on the wall.
Yeah.
Don't hit your hip on it.
Yes.
You know, they're useful,
mm.
but, you know, for somebody who can't see, they can be a hazard.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I think
well, there's a small step.
Yeah.
You know, step over when you go through the doorway.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
yeah.
you know.
Otherwise you're going to fall.
Fall flat on
roll
your face.
Into the toilet.
Exactly. You know, there's things like that.
Yeah. I think as well when you're learning from peers, you can understand something theoretically,
yep.
but when you're living it, you get to share the way that you experience something in a way that's potentially more meaningful.
Yep. Yep.
And so being able to have that means that, like, I can explain to somebody how to do something because I've read it in a book.
Yes.
But you can explain how to do that to somebody because you've been doing it for 49 years.
Yes.
And
then they can explain how they do it back to me.
Yeah.
And we can both go, oh, well, we're experiencing it totally differently.
Yeah.
Even though we're in a similar circumstance.
But actually, I didn't know that there was that tip.
Yeah,
I'm going to pick that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Here's an example. I was watching a video. It was a blind man doing a video. And for years, you know, like my whole life, I've been putting toothpaste, like holding the brush up to my face so I can see it.
Yeah.
And I've been squirting the toothpaste on in front of me so I can see where it's going. This man says he gets the toothpaste, he squirts it onto his finger so he can feel it, he puts it in his mouth and then he brushes his teeth.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, why did I never think about that? I can do that without seeing.
Yeah.
Never entered my head. Something so simple, you know, people just do things differently. And unless you actually communicate that.
Do you think, and I know that there's probably no way for you to actually answer this question, but do you think you've got a better sense of proprioception, a better sense of body awareness than a sighted person would have? Like, I'm not sure a sighted person could actually put toothpaste on their finger with their eyes closed.
Go home tonight and tell me.
I'm going to try. I'm 100% going to try.
Send me a message tomorrow. Let me know.
There's toothpaste all over the bathroom
I know
floor.
I can.
Yeah.
Because I've tried it.
Yeah.
I still do my own method.
Yeah.
Because I've
been doing it for however long.
Exactly. But the fact is I now know that there's an alternative, you know, because, I mean, who knows? Power might go out.
Yes.
Whatever little side I've got, still want to brush my teeth.
Yeah.
I can do it another way. The other method is you can actually squirt it into your mouth if you're using your own toothpaste.
Yeah.
If you're not having to share. So, you know, there's lots of different ways to achieve the same goal.
Mm.
And I had never, ever thought about that. It's just not something that had ever entered my head because I had my method and it worked.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think to a degree we have great perception about our bodies, but it also fails miserably in some circumstances. It wasn't probably, we're talking about a year ago maybe, I did a look good, feel good course because try dressing yourself when you don't
that's one of
see
my
your
questions.
Body.
Yep. And that's kind of where the, you know, when I said before where you, oh, actually that's not on, that's not being recorded on this. So prior to starting recording, Penny was showing me an adaptive tech piece where, which we'll talk about in a minute, but I was saying, you know, oh, well, that'd be great for labelling the colour of your shoes.
Yes.
Because how do you make sure you go out in coordinated clothes? Like, I would buy everything all in one colour.
I tend to now because that was part of that course.
Yeah.
It actually spurred me on to actually go and get my colours
done.
Because
the teal's looking amazing on you, by the way.
Thank you. It's one of my. This
one of your colours.
A little bit bright, but this is kind of in the range that I'm meant to be, apparently. So I'm told. But prior to that, I would just buy what I liked.
Yeah.
Which doesn't necessarily suit me.
That's not just blind people thing.
No,
that's,
I know
that's
it's
an
not.
Every,
I know
that's
it's
an
not
every woman thing.
That's an every woman thing.
Probably an
but
every human
it's
thing.
It's made that, you know, it's like the cool and the warm tones.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've gotten that concept. I don't think I had that initially.
Yeah.
But I've gotten that concept now. And I can, for the most part, see cool and the difference between cool and warm when I pair them together.
Yeah.
But I can't necessarily see it if I just look at a red.
Right. Yeah.
Red's particularly hard. You know, is a warm red, a cool red. You know, I tend to stay away from reds anyway, but but that's a hard colour for me. Black and navy blue. Oh, that's a nightmare. Is it black or is it navy blue? It's always a question. But yeah, that was one of those things that the perception of your own body and what suits you is hard when you can't actually see yourself in the mirror.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, in my head, I'm like
6'7", leggy blonde.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know.
Maybe not 6'7", but yeah.
You know, nice proportions, all good. You know, and I pick something off the hanger and I go and try it on and, you know, can't get my arm through the get stuck in it and have to spend like 10 minutes trying to wedge it off.
Yeah. And you think, oh, I think I live here now.
Exactly. Like, I'm going to have my arm up above my head for the rest of my life. It's just, it's your vogue.
Perfect.
You know, even trying to find the right size.
Yeah.
Is, you know, and.
Because, I mean, it's hard enough to find the tag sometimes on clothes anyway.
Yes. Yep.
And then, so you've got to, you actually have to try and find it.
I have to locate it.
And then try and read the
tiny
writing.
Then I have to try and read it, either with a magnifying glass. Some of the cheaper places are easy. Or easier because they have the coloured tags.
Unless somebody's
put
it on
the
coloured
hangers,
colored
unless it's on the wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it's on the wrong thing, then you're all mixed up. Or you have to find somebody to ask, which is easier said than done when you can't see.
Yeah.
Some shops, the salesperson's on you as soon as you walk through the door. Other shops, you can...
You're lucky if you can find
You can
one.
Circle the place for you forever, trying to find customer
service.
You can
hide from her, it's fine.
Exactly. It's like, where is customer service in here?
Yeah.
I have no idea. But that's where either my magnifying glass comes in handy, or this new technology, you know, that comes in handy as well, you know, because it allows me to quickly scan the tag once I locate where it is. And it's not always perfect because tags quite often have different sized fonts and it messes it up a little bit, but it will give me hints.
Yeah.
And quite often the hints are enough for me to work out whether it's
worth trying on
or not. Or otherwise, you know, give it the good old quick body test and see whether it you think
that's
going
to do one thigh.
That's one thigh, one arm.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the general gist of it. You know, having done this class, you know, quite recently, because as a woman too, what you leave school looking like is not necessarily what you look like after five children.
Yeah.
That alters things a lot.
Mm.
And, you know, as your life changes, like with five children at home, all I ever needed was leggings and a t-shirt or six to cover my day. Didn't need to worry. You know, just put a new shirt on.
Yeah,
fine.
That's it.
But now that my kids are grown up and going off to school and doing their own things, you know, I have the freedom to get back out in the world, and, you know, leggings and a daggy t-shirt isn't really...
It's not going to cut it for you anymore.
No, not me. Yeah. I mean, it might cut it for some people. Yeah.
And also some people who are staying home and not leaving the house with five kids may choose to do full face of makeup and...
Absolutely.
You know,
and makeup is something that has always quite eluded me.
Yeah.
Because I've not come from a family where makeup was a thing.
Mm.
So learning to do that has taken a long time. And, you know, most of the time I don't bother. It's just too much hard work. But I know, you know, there are totally blind people who go the whole hog and mirrorless.
Just
lots of practice. There's holding your mascara brush still and moving your head to cover all your lashes.
Yeah.
There's one lady I've seen that she uses, you know, the first aid tape.
Oh, yeah.
She puts that just under her eye to catch.
Oh, wow.
Any drop, you know, fallout.
Yeah.
You.
I mean, she's got no skin left under her eye anymore, but...
No. It's such a fine...
Yeah.
It doesn't really stick. It just... Yeah. So you can just take it off.
Yeah.
And not ruin your foundation and everything underneath. Everything, for the most part, is just done with your fingers or very short brushes.
Yeah.
Because longer brushes are harder to...
It's further away, you're going to poke your eyeball out.
Absolutely.
And whether it works or it's just filling a hole, let's keep it filling a hole.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we like it there.
That's exactly it. It might not work, but let's leave it in the head.
We like it in the head.
Yeah.
But, yeah, lots of things happen with your fingers. And, you know, that's where all your labelling and having, you know,
make sure
somebody
assess
what colours suit you. And, you know, it also is very nice to have somebody, does my makeup look good?
Yeah.
And not just, yes, dear. You know, somebody who's trustworthy to actually go, perfect, except for you've got some lipstick on your teeth.
And
or...
Look, you definitely...
You missed your lip line really, like, by a mile. Go and do that again.
And you definitely need that as, you know, in your situation.
Yeah.
I was on the train the other day going, and I don't catch the train very often, and I was going to go see Pink, and there were some people who, well, they were blind drunk.
Different kind of blind.
And so one woman decided she was going to help her friend with her lipstick.
Oh, gosh.
On the train.
Oh.
Well... drunk. And then she just missed her lip
sometimes
completely.
I wish I could see.
Oh, honestly, I wish I had videoed it. So she missed her lip completely, and like, so she just got this pink smear that kind of went from the right hand side of her lip down to her chin. And so a friend just sort of smooshed it out of the way, so she's now got basically like her whole chin is fluorescent pink. And her friends are like, oh yeah, you look great, it's fine, it's fine. I'm going, I'm sorry, I know you're a stranger, but I cannot let you get off the train no. looking like that.
No.
You need to, like, you need just to need sort to that out.
Yeah. Just take it off.
Yeah.
Just go with none.
So it's fine. That's exactly it. But we all need somebody in our life who's going to go, yeah, that's not okay.
Here's the truth. Yes.
Yeah, that's it.
Yes. Gently.
That shifts on inside out, yeah. And you've actually put eyeshadow on your mouth instead of lipstick. Yes. So you're going to need to go and do that again.
Your shoes are the same.
That's it.
But one's navy blue and one's black.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And that's one thing, you know. Don't buy, you know, buy things in the same colours but not shoes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when they're...
I mean, that happens often. One blue, one navy black, one brown, one black. Yeah.
They feel the same, but they're not the same shoes. You know, go for different styles, different colours, different styles.
Which is tricky because we often say, you know, when we're shopping, if you find something that fits and it's comfortable, buy one in every colour.
Which is fine in shirts.
Yeah.
It's fine in pants, but shoes get a bit messy.
Or if you're going to do it, make sure you have like one white pair, one black pair.
Yeah, so they're very big contrasting. Contrast. Or having your labels. And labelling comes down to all sorts of things like we label. You know the little rubber dots that you put on the inside of cupboards to stop the doors from slamming? Quite often we'll use those like on our microwaves, you know, to know where the 5 is. You know, you have the five on the phone.
Mm.
We do the same to our microwaves, anything else with a keypad, you know, have one on the cook button or on like the 200 dial on the oven. But when it comes to clothes, sometimes it'll be like the navy blue pants.
Yeah.
You might have 3 pairs of black ones and 2 pair of navy blue ones, and the navy blue pairs have got a button stitched into the waistband.
Yeah.
So you know which ones are which. Yeah. Or it could be somebody's like cut the tag,
label, yeah.
So you can feel that that's the So you know what you're getting.
Yeah.
you don't just have to, you know, throw clothes on and hope for the best. Hope that you match.
Again, it's a tricky question because this is all you've ever known.
Yeah.
But you have 5 children.
Yeah.
How is parenting a child? Is difficult. Parenting 5, like I have no concept of parenting 5 children. Like that's so foreign to me. I think that's probably more foreign to me than being blind, to be honest. How do you parent 5 children with such limited vision? I mean, there's no other option.
I made my bed. Got to sleep in it.
So true.
And it's just one ball up.
Four fallen
catch,
down.
Yep. You just catch them as they fall or try. And it's constant, you know, it's organised chaos. It's constant decision making on what's most urgent to do next.
But
it comes down to being organised as well.
Oh, see, this is why I can't have 5 children.
And, well, I'm terrible at it too. But, yeah. You make your bed, you've got to lie in it.
How do you do things like changing a nappy?
Most of it happens by feel. You can change a nappy by, well, accidents happen.
Yeah, and that's kind of
And as mothers, we learn how to deal with the ill.
Yeah, right? Yes.
You know, it's like, I feel sick. Well, you know, more than once I've held out the bottom of bottom of my shirt.
I think we've all done that, haven't we?
You know,
because it's easier to clean me than it is to get it out of the carpet.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
It's just a and like if I've as far as a vision situation, I've got it contained here.
Yeah.
I don't have to search for it.
Oh my goodness, I didn't think of that.
You know, there's things like that.
Oh yeah. Oh.
You know, and it's like, you know, I can wash my hands.
Yeah,
it's
fine. So,
you know, but yeah, most of a nappy you can do by feel. I mean, it's a process. I mean,
and I suppose you had 5. You were really well practiced by the end.
Really practiced by the end, you know, and it just happens. But I was actually reading a post from a blind woman. She was saying how hard it was adjusting to having a baby, and she said if we've got any tips. Put them on the bottom of the post. And one of the things I actually wrote yesterday, totally unthinking about today, but now it's coming up, I had a change table, but I never used it.
Yeah.
Because changing a baby, especially when they get to the
wriggly
stage, up on a change table, you know, when you can't
see it. You
can't fall off the floor. Yeah. And I had changing mats that I kept in one in the bedroom, one in the other end of the house.
Yeah.
And I used to just change them on the floor. And more than once when they got to the wriggling stage, I'd actually, it became a full body sport almost.
Yeah.
You know, I'd actually lay the baby under my knee.
Yeah, yeah.
And hold them down and...
Yeah.
change one end kind of pinned.
Yeah.
And you know, then set them free. Mm. You're all clean, you're good to go. And like if you miss a bit, you miss a bit, you catch it in the bath time.
Yeah, right.
You know.
I've got like terrible mental pictures because I've seen you doing things where your nose is like practically touching things.
No, it never got to that point.
Yeah. And because I was thinking you've got boys as well.
Take a breath and dive in.
Yeah, no. Exactly. And so I'm thinking, you know, when you take a nappy off a newborn boy and they wee and, you know, it's like a fountain. So I've kind of got a thing of you being close so cloth you can nappy. See it. Yeah.
Because you're not looking anyway. Cloth nappy over the top, do it underneath.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then it, at least if the...
You're not going to cop a face. You're not going to get a face. You're getting your clothes trying to have a look.
That only has to happen once and you learn your lesson.
Yeah, you definitely learn to change a nappy with your mouth shut.
Yes, exactly. Or your eyes closed.
I never did that one, but
no. But yeah, you learn pretty quickly to, and it was funny. I was in actually Gosnell's Markets one day when I had a newborn baby boy, and I remember this little old lady coming up to me and she said, "Little boys' nappies are so much easier to change than little girls. It's just a little light switch." It's just like it actually is so much easier, little boys. You've got to dodge, but they're easier.
Were there any other challenges from when, you know, particularly the newborn stage, or even...
Breastfeeding was huge.
Yeah.
Breastfeeding was huge and there was nobody really knows how to help. Nobody really knows how to help with that one at all. And I got a definite sense from the staff at the hospital. Nobody said anything. But I got a definite sense of...
Just bottle fed, it'll be easier.
Yeah, this is not going to work.
Yeah.
And I made it work, but it was so hard. And it took me 3 months.
With each child or just your first
child? No, just the first child.
Yeah.
Just the first one. It was also hampered by the fact that I had quite a traumatic first birth.
Mm.
I'd lost quite a lot of blood.
Mm.
And no one ever... mentioned that if you lose a lot of blood, your body's going to actually work on replacing blood
before it
replaces milk.
Yeah. You know?
And nobody mentioned that. Yeah. And of course I went through a whole lot of, this is a whole different topic, but I went through a whole lot of, you know, mother stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I'm worthless, I'm useless, it's not working for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And I had one blind friend and she was, you know, I'd phone her up and she'd already gone through the process. And she's like, "I can't tell you how to do it. You've just got to find the way that works for you." But she used to coach me through the, "Don't make a decision about it now. Make a decision about it next feed." Because I'd always be phoning up going, "I'm going to give up. I can't do this anymore." She'd be like, "Decide that next feed.
Yeah.
Decide that next feed." And for 3 months, she coached me to go for the next. And on the 3-month mark, he latched and we fed.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic.
Yeah.
And I fed all five of them.
Yeah.
Actually, for the first one, you know, I actually kind of almost had to shift him off because the second the one second wanted one, to move on because he went that long.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah. But there was a definite lack of resources and lack of knowledgeable support.
And
I don't know if that's changed. I mean, we're talking 20 years ago.
Yeah, because that's 20 years ago. And then your youngest is 7?
My youngest is 7, yeah.
But when you've had 5 kids... You're generally not looking for support on your 5th.
No, so. The 5th one, you just roll with it. You know what to do.
Yeah, you just wing it, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So it would be interesting to see. It would be interesting to see what supports there are. And I have to say, I'm going to sound really jaded about the NDIS system right now.
You aren't the only one.
Yeah, I'm trying to temper it, but I think if there's a way that someone can charge you for it, then they're going to charge you for it.
Very much. Yeah.
But would you actually get anything useful or would you just get a bill from it as far as looking for support around those kinds of things? Because
I don't
it's such a niche market, isn't it?
It is. It's very niche. Yeah. And, you know, everybody's different.
Yeah. You
know, some people are ducks to water and other people struggle. And
there are amazing lactation consultants.
Oh, I mean, I can't say that I didn't have a good lactation consultant, because I had a couple that were brilliant, lovely people.
And they were probably desperate to help you and just didn't know how.
But they just didn't know how. Mm. And so much came down to me just finding a way to make it work for myself.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, nobody ever thought to tell me that milk supply is a secondary situation. So that hampered, you know, the progress as well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I spent 3 months on a breast pump just trying to make a supply happen.
Mm.
You know, it was hard yards, but we got through it.
Yeah, and you had another one, and then three more after that.
Absolutely. didn't stop. Now I'm done. I'm over. I'm over it. Oh. I'm over it.
Have there been any other challenges, like with as your kids are getting older?
Yep. It's cuts and scrapes.
Oh, yeah.
Cuts and scrapes, splinters. Splinters.
Oh, my God, splinters.
They're a disaster for everybody, but try not seeing.
Oh, God. Just imagining you trying to pick out a splinter with a pen. I can barely see the pen, let alone the splinter.
The magnifying glass and the tweezers and, like, good lighting and trying to hold a wriggly screaming child still while not getting upset by the wriggly screaming part.
I'm trying to help you.
Exactly. Just stay still.
Yeah.
Just let me grab it, even if we... what is it? Poultices are a brilliant thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, we'll stick this on for the time being. Yeah. Hopefully it will pull it out. You know, if it draws it out, then we're good.
Yeah. Hopefully by the time it's drawn it out enough, your dad will be home and he can get it out. Exactly.
Exactly. Although my oldest, at about the age of 7 or 8, he was getting really good at pulling splinters out of the younger ones.
Yeah.
And because he always had fabulously good motor skills, fine motor skills. So he was born for it.
Yeah.
But I used to hold the kid still, and he used to do the extraction. It was a team effort.
Yeah.
9 times out of 10, we got it sorted before Dad came home. And I think we've only ever had to run up to the emergency department once or twice for something that was beyond my vision capabilities. Yeah. Usually that was involving breakages and
stuff.
Yeah. You know, that's beyond everybody's...
to do with vision.
Yeah. No, that's beyond everybody's capabilities.
Yes.
It's just like, it's not sitting right. It doesn't look right.
Yeah.
We're out of here.
I don't think that's supposed to poke out like that. No. We better go see someone.
It's a bit wonky, honey. Let's go. So, yeah, but that is an issue. You're trying to manage that, and it must be so much harder for people with no vision.
Mm.
But, yeah, you know, under those circumstances, you just have to let go. Like, as independent as I am and I want to be, you have to know your limits, and you have to just say, okay, I'm going to take you next door, and I'm going to check and see if the lady next door can see if this needs stitching or if we can just stick a Band-Aid on it.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You know, sometimes you need
Penny,
to...
No, Penny, I can see his bone. That's going to need stitches.
Okay, let's go.
Yeah.
You know.
Let me see if I can stick my finger in it. Yeah, we better go.
Exactly. You know, so you've got to know your limits. Most of the time I can nut things out myself, but every now and then you have to just suck it up and go, okay, I need some help.
What about your kids? Like, kids are amazing. I love kids. They have a way to...
I love babies.
Have they ever used your blindness?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's food. Food is a big one. Food and drinks. You know, I remember discovering... my oldest was probably about 8. And I remember discovering outside in the garden bed under his window, there was all kinds of cans, lots and lots of cans. He'd been sneaking drinks.
Yeah.
You know, just popping them through the fly screen. She'll never find these. But yeah, that's always been a fun thing. They, you know, it's really easy to sneak food out of, you know, past me.
Yeah.
You know, they don't even have to hide it behind their back, or they can just walk on by with a giant slab of cake on one hand.
If they just do it in the right way. Awkward posture. What are you stealing?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, or I heard the fridge.
Yeah.
What did you get?
Yeah.
You know, it's like even last night I woke up because I thought I could hear this movement in the kitchen. And I thought, oh my gosh, the cat's into the bread again. She's got a carb habit. And I leapt out of bed and I went into the kitchen and there's my son, you know, sneaking in to go and grab a snack. Not the cat at all.
Yeah,
cat's sorry, getting the blame, puss. But yeah. You're all good. But other clues let me on, you know, let me catch on to what they're up to.
Yeah.
A lot of the time. Otherwise, I just find the evidence afterwards and then we have a discussion about what you should do. Could you handle that situation better?
Yeah.
You know, are you regularly that hungry? Am I not feeding you enough?
Yeah. Are you bored?
Yeah. You know, I'm sure there's probably been the instance or two where they've actually taken something off their plate and hidden that as well.
You fed know, it to the animals.
Yes, I ate it.
Yeah.
Animals. You can't. I believe, my personal belief, you can't raise 5 children without a dog.
Yeah.
And be blind. You need a dog. Yeah. Oh. Clean up crew in aisle 6.
Look, I mean, I'm not blind and I agree with you.
Yep.
But
very useful.
Are there issues with falling over the dog?
Yeah, my dog doesn't move. She just lays right where she lays in doorways regularly. It's just a habitual doorway thing. And I am constantly stepping over her.
Yeah.
She doesn't move.
Well, that's good because I have to often step over our dogs. And one of our dogs is, I mean, he's a 60 kilo Mastiff. And I stepped over him and I was carrying something and I was a bit awkward and he stood up. Like, dude.
No, we're not up for a ride today.
See, I'm riding backwards into the kitchen on the dog, like far out.
It's a bit much.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. So, mine lays in the doorways all the time.
Yeah. I'm constantly having to. Well, that's probably because he's too fat to get up and anything from all
the from all the scraps, all the things that she has to hoover up all the time. Yeah. If she gets trodden on, she also knows.
Yeah.
Then they're not silly enough not to know.
Yeah.
Because I used to work in a place where there was vision impaired people, and we actually had a couple of. There was a guide dog or two, but there was also PR dogs.
Yeah.
You know, failed guide dogs. Yeah. PR dogs.
That sounds so much better than failed guide dog.
It does. Yeah. But they're there for, you know, the public side of things. But all of those dogs in that building knew who could see and who couldn't.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, a sighted person would come through and they'd just lay there in the doorways.
Yeah.
And one of the blind people would come through and they'd all get up and shift. They'd move their legs or, you know, they'd tuck themselves in.
Yeah, I've been stood on too many times. Get out of her way.
Yeah. So I figure if my dog gets trodden on, it's her own fault if she doesn't move.
Yeah.
She knows.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. It's just her fault.
Yeah.
Not mine.
So, and I'm really aware. Oh my goodness, we've been talking for so long. I promise I'll let you go soon.
That's all right.
Emma and Penny had so much to talk about in this episode that the recording went for 2 hours. We've broken it up into 2 parts. The next episode will be out in 2 weeks. We hope you enjoyed listening.
Thank you for joining me for today's episode of A Hidden World of Women, a podcast brought to you by Women's Health and Wellbeing Services. For more information on the services we offer, head to whws.org.au or Women's Health and Wellbeing Services on YouTube and social media. Looking forward to the next episode where we uncover the hidden world of women.